Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. In this episode, this is actually the third installment of the podcast I've been doing with Nick, the nutritionist who reached out to me on Instagram who is struggling with binge eating. The first time we spoke, he was binging about 3 to 5 times a week. The second time we spoke, he binged only 4 times in a whole month. And now in this episode, we check in with Nick to see how well he's been doing. And spoiler alert, it's really, really amazing. So if you haven't listened to the first 2 episodes I did with Nick, please do that and then listen to this episode. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you do, please leave a 5-star review. They've been helping a lot. Let's get into it. What's up, dude?
Oh, there you are. What's up, Jordan? How are you?
You know, I was just talking, and I was like, why can't he hear me? Why can't he hear me? And then I realized, oh, I didn't turn my microphone on. Ooh. That's why.
Perfect. That is
literally
the exact reason IT guys ask you if it's plugged in.
I was like, why? Plugged in, the audio settings are good. And then I was, oh, the switch to turn it on is not switched. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited. I'm going to Ireland in a few hours.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm pumped right now.
Well, all right. So let's just jump right into it. And just for people who have not listened to the first 2 times that we spoke, this, by the way, and I know I said it on the second episode, this is, I think, again, the most anticipated podcast I've ever done. Long story short, and first and foremost, if you haven't listened to the first 2 episodes I've done with Nick, definitely go listen to them. But Nick reached out to me in an Instagram Q&A. It must have been several months ago at this point, and basically saying, I'm a nutritionist and I struggle with binge eating, which I was incredibly excited about in terms of binge eating is something that many people struggle with, but very few people actually talk about. And it's actually, I think it's even more common within the fitness industry, within coaches, within nutrition coaches, within nutritionists, within strength coaches. I think it's way more common than a lot of people believe or know or even think about. So to have you reach out to me and publicly want to discuss it was incredible. And I was very excited. And we had one call after the first call. Basically, you went from binging between 3 to 5 times a week after our first call to an average of binging one time a week. So you went to 4 times a whole month and binged. And and now this is our third time getting on. And basically, to recap our last call, we went from, okay, so we're going to continue to have a better relationship with food and to reduce binge eating and also add a component of actually trying to lose weight as well. So super excited to talk with you. Give me a rundown. What's going on?
And then last month, total roller coaster of just shit going on in my life.
Okay, what's going on? Talk to me.
So where I'm proud of that is I'll just start off. Big old one binge since our last talk.
Exactly. Shut up, dude. One binge?
Don't get me wrong, I binged like a motherfucker that night. But
it was a big binge, but one binge, and it wasn't like you kept going after that. You had one, then you got back on track.
Yeah, back on track. I remember texting you about it. I was like, hey, you know, my weight's up like 5 pounds since yesterday, 5-6 pounds. And but I'm back on track and feeling pretty all right. And I moved on from it. And was that
odd for you? Like, did you feel bad about it? Were you surprised that you were able to get back on track? Like, talk about that.
Yeah, that was a weird feeling, actually. It was like the best way I can describe it. It was a click. So like, you know, like I've said before, it's not that I didn't know what to do per se when it came to, you know, getting my eating under control and binging and things like that. It's just something in my head just wasn't clicking. And that was almost the click moment of like, all right, shit happens and we're fine. Like it's a new day. It's all right. We got this.
Dude, that's huge, man. What an outrageous accomplishment to go from within a period of 2 to 3 months, binging 3 to 5 times a week, to binging once in an entire month. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. I mean, obviously, I couldn't be happy about it. And I hope not to try to make it sound like it was as easy as it was. Like, I'll be going into the times where it wasn't easy and I made it through. Like, it's not just, oh, I don't want to binge anymore. Like, It's like telling someone with anxiety, just don't think about it. Like, if it was that easy, we wouldn't have the problem, right? And it was just like, it's almost hard to explain because it's literally just, I had that moment where it clicked and I was like, oh, we're fine. And that was, it's like the complications that I was putting into, you know, trying to get my binge eating under control and trying to do strategy A, B, and C, and then failing and then hating myself and then going back to strategy A, B, C, and then, you know, messing up again, and being able to have that moment where I sat back, I'm like, I didn't fuck up. I got the rest of this week to be back on track. I have all of next week to be back on track.
Talk to me. What, for example, were some of the strategies that you would try and implement before that you weren't able to stick to?
Oh, meal prep. Number one, I was like, if I'm prepared, I won't binge. Backfired sometimes because I'm like, damn it, I just ate 3 days worth of my meal prep.
Interesting. That's, dude, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because all across the industry, you always hear meal prep, meal prep, meal prep, meal prep, meal prep, and I never hear anything negative about meal prep. No one ever talks, but I think that's a really good point, especially even if you don't eat all of your meal prep, even if you meal prep and then you just order out, or you go to your cupboard and eat a whole bunch of other food, even though you meal prepped, it can create this level and this feeling of guilt, which will then perpetuate the binging. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much bang on. So like, there's two ways of looking at it. Don't get me wrong, I'm a huge proponent of meal prep. I think being prepared is a great starting point for a lot of people. But then there's two edges of that sword, like you mentioned. So I'd have times where I'd meal prep and then I'd feel a binge coming on and I'd go and I'm like, here's 2 cups of rice, 4 chicken breasts. I shredded cheese on all of it because cheese is fucking delicious. naturally, I didn't really eat my prepped veggies, but you know, that's fine. So then I'd have this huge binge. I'm like, well, shit, now A, I'm out of meal prep. So my lunch for tomorrow is screwed. My lunch for the next day is screwed. And then I still had this binge on, you know, what seemingly good food. So like the preparation kind of backfired there. Or the other trap that I'd fall into is I'd meal prep and then I'd get to work and I'm like, oh no, my meal prep's in the fridge. Guess who's ordering sushi? And so then I'd be at work and I'd have, you know, a couple rolls of sushi and I'm like, God, and I just felt like an idiot. I'm like, wow, I spent all this time and this money meal prepping and then here I am just going out for lunch anyways. Like, what's wrong with me? Why didn't I pack lunch? And then that spiraled into going home and I'm like, well, fuck, I feel like shit today. Let's binge. And it just like, it snowballed off itself. So on one hand, I was taking the step to like be prepared. And then on the other hand, from the emotional standpoint behind eating at the time, I still find a way to have like build that guilt upon myself of this, you know, striving to be perfect and being perfect is almost impossible. And then the stress kicked in.
You know,
the perceived stress kicked in, right? Like, it's not real stress. I have food. I'm not hungry.
The common theme that I hear with you and that I hear with everyone who struggles with binge eating is it's whatever your trigger is, whatever your method is, the reason that we often end up binging and perpetuate binging is really the underlying factor is the guilt. It's the guilt that you feel once you do it that makes you feel like you screwed everything up, which allows it to perpetuate. So for some people, meal prep might be amazing. For other people, meal prep might not be. For some people, calorie counting might be amazing. For other people, it might not be. What you have to do is you have to figure out what is causing your feelings of guilt. And from there, that's where the journey begins. That's the starting point. Like that's like day 1.1. How do we eliminate the guilt? And from there, that's where it's going to be so individualized. What one of the many things that I love about you and I appreciate about you is your level of candor and honesty is second to no one. I mean, just how straightforward you are, how blunt you are, how honest you are, how like everything that you're saying, I think is so incredibly helpful and insightful to people because it's no BS. It's no nonsense. Like this is the truth. Like the meal prep, the guilt that you would feel from meal prepping and then not eating the meal prep foods and then going overboard would then lead to more and more and more. I can't even imagine how many people can probably relate to that.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, you made a really, really good point about starting with what works for you. Like, a really good example, I'm sure everyone who listens to this goes to your story and you get questions where it's like, what about this diet? And what about this diet? And what about this diet? And one thing that always makes me laugh is your answer to all of them is calorie deficit. Because it's that concept of like, you know, you can do what will work for you. And to there's a thousand different ways to get to that endpoint. You know, 5 + 5 = 10, but so is 2 + 8. So we can create the same end goal. So it's like what works for you. And I really like that you brought that up, actually. So probably about 3 weeks ago now, I had a client and they're like, so not to sound like an asshole, but why do you binge? Like, why? I'm just for, you know, conversation's sake, for learning is just, you know, what happens? And I'm like, actually, that's a good question.
It's a great question.
That's a great question. It's like, why, like, oh, Nick, why do you binge? Like, you particularly, not, you know, not what the book says, not what the data has shown. Like, why do you binge? And I sat back. I'm like, oh, shit. I can't take credit for this next part. But I remember listening to a TED talk like 4 years ago. This guy was talking about using curiosity to cure addiction. And he talked about how his people was smoking. And he was saying that, you know, they had a test group of people and they're like, all right, don't try to quit smoking, but here's a journal. And then before you smoke, I want you to write down how you feel, what your stress is, what the time of day is. And then I want you to go smoke. We're not going to try to stop that yet. And then I want you to come back and write down how it was, how you feel, like what the taste, like be really curious and conscious of what's happening. And the funny part of that study is by the end of like the 6 or 8 week period or whatever it was, they lost almost half of their participants because they just stopped smoking.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So when I got asked that question, I'm like, that's a good question. So then, you know, throughout the last month and a bit, which I think I can, you know, like some of this, I think was a huge contributing factor to the fact that I only binged once in the last, since our last talk. But every time I feel a binge coming on, I stop down, but like, okay, 10 minutes, I can binge on whatever I want, but I have to write down how I feel right now and the, what happened throughout my day and, you know, what I've eaten throughout the day up until now, what stress am I feeling right now? You know, why do I feel like this is coming on? And then if at the end of that, I want to binge, go to town. And every single time I did that, by the time the 10 minutes was up, I had no desire anymore. Because in my head, I'm like, oh, well, I'm, you know, I'm stressed out because, you know, I miss doing this quote for a sale customer. Hey, and then, you know, I missed this follow up with a client because I was caught up here and that was causing me stress. I'm like, okay, so if I just go deal with that, the stress is gone. And by the end of that 10-minute chunk of just being curious about why I'm feeling this way and what's going on, the need for binge just wasn't there anymore because I'm cluing into these outside factors that are giving me that feeling.
I love that. I think that's incredible. One thing that I've spoken about for years is number one, that the 20-minute rule, where it's like if you in 20 minutes you want to binge, go for it. Just wait 20 minutes. And the recommendation I would usually give is, I don't care, like go on a walk, go watch TV, go whatever. But I like this idea a lot in terms of diving a little bit deeper into what's actually going on, taking the time to journal, taking the time to really analyze what you're feeling and why you're feeling it. And whether it's writing it down or maybe even just having a conversation with yourself out loud, just verbalizing what's going on, I think it's super helpful, not least of which because the desire to binge is an impulsive one. It's not a logical one. It's not even something that people want to do. In fact, often when they're doing it, they hate themselves for it and they feel guilty and more. And they're like, why can't I stop? Why can't I stop? It is a complete and utter emotionally impulsive reaction. Whereas when you take those 10 to 20 minutes and then you can let that impulse subside and focus on other things. And I love the idea of focusing on what you did that day, what might have stressed you out, why might this impulsive reaction be coming on, and diving deeper into it. I think that's tremendously beneficial. And I love that. I love the cigarette aspect of it, like the smoking cessation. And I also love how you brought that into binging. I think that's perfect.
Yeah, it's fine. I found for me, it worked incredibly well. And you know, I've talked to clients about it. And then I was also able to answer that question, like, why do I binge? And I started breaking that down. And it's just, you know, I get stressed from this, or, you know, I work a 10-hour day where, say, I don't see clients. I'm just behind my computer. So I've been by myself for the last 10 hours. And I come home and, you know, my roommate, my girlfriend's at work, and I'm sitting here by myself. And I'm like, well, fuck. And then it ends up like, you know, the stress piles up. And then I take a look in the fridge. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to make dinner. And then, you know, I have to go grocery shopping because I just ate everything.
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah, just, you know, spending that extra couple minutes to be like, why do I feel this way, has gotten that time frame has gotten rid of my desire to do it.
So talk to me. I know you said that it wasn't wasn't unicorns and sunshines and rainbows and sprinkles. Like, there was difficulty throughout the month. Could you talk about that in terms of, you only binged once, which is extraordinary beyond measure. I think people listening to the first episode, the second episode, now this episode, they're gonna, like, their jaws are gonna be dropped, the fact that you went from 3 to 5 times a week to one time in a month. But talk about how, what happened throughout the month when there were difficult times, when maybe you almost did it, but then you caught yourself. Like, talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I think you've asked me this question on a previous podcast, and I think a lot of it is just, I'm at the point with it, and I've been working on it for so long that, like, I really, really want to kick it. Like, the real desire is there. It's like that, you know, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb has to really want to change. And I think that for me, it's just that desire to want to kick it has been just so, so strong the last little bit. And like I said, it's like that switch moment. Like, one of the things I talked to you is, I kind of this last month is when I started to realize that the good feeling that I get after not binging, like feeling it coming on and sitting down and be like, no, we're not doing this. Like, that is so much more powerful than what I would get from the binge. Because obviously you binge, you get that little dopamine rush in the brain, you get that temporary good feeling, and then all the guilt kicks in. And I just, the good feeling that I got from controlling it just felt so much better.
That I think is without question, arguably the most important point that I think will help people, really, not just with binging, but with anything they struggle to do that they want to do that is very difficult to do, whether it's stopping binging, whether it's getting to the gym, whether it's being more consistent with nutrition, whether it's stop procrastinating work, whether it's having a conversation you need to have with someone. It's focusing on the feeling of how you will feel once it's done versus the feeling of right now. And I think that the feeling of how you feel right now is tends to be more impulsive. It tends to be more wanting that short-term pleasure, whereas focusing on how you're going to feel once it's all said and done, that's when you can start to feel pride, and that's when you can start to feel proud of yourself. And when I very much believe that feeling prideful and feeling proud of yourself is equally as strong, if not a stronger, of a drug-like feeling than the dopamine rush. Because, I mean, the dopamine rush is great, but then once it's gone, it sort of like rushes up, it spikes, but then it dips back down even harder, and then you feel guilty and awful about yourself. Whereas pride, that feeling lasts a long time. That the feeling of pride can last your entire life. The feeling of pride can, and even if you don't feel it in the moment, you can remember a moment in which you were very proud of yourself, and you can remember how good it felt. You can remember how there's something to be said about feeling just like a good, strong human being, a good, strong person, a person who can be admired, a person who you'd want your children to admire, your friends to admire. And that, focusing on that feeling, is something that is just tremendously powerful.
I couldn't agree with that more. Especially now that I've made the switch. You know, if you asked me 3 months ago about that feeling of not doing it, I'm like, well, I don't understand. And once I actually felt it, once it was there and in front of me and it was happening, like, that, the power behind that was incredible. So if you don't mind, we can go into specifics here.
Dude, I love that. I mean, I know for the, we spoke about last time how, so for the first month, we didn't focus on weight loss at all, just solely focusing on eliminating and reducing the binging. The second month, because you had only binged four times, which was tremendous in and of itself, we were like, okay, cool, let's bring in, now let's try and lose some weight as well. So talk to us, how'd you do with that?
Oh, well, good question. So remember when you told me not to track macros?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I didn't, for a disclaimer. However, it's also almost impossible for me not to. Because like with a lot of my clients, for so long, I've been eyeballing macros and doing the math in my head to the point where like my clients will send me pictures of the food in front of them and I will tell them how many calories are in it.
Yep, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you do it all. So like, yeah, I'm not tracking, but if I'm sitting in front of the meal, by the time it took me to get the first bite into my mouth, I know exactly how much I'm eating. Give or take 10%, but I've gotten pretty accurate over the last like 5 consecutive years of doing it. And with a lot of us, you know, for weight loss is obvious. It's like, okay, when I eat, I want a protein and I want a veggie. That's baseline. Okay. It can be anything I want, but I want a protein and a veggie when I eat because I know they're good for me. And then with whatever carb source I had, I would eat the protein and the veggie first, drink water, wait a sec. And if I was still hungry, I eat half my carbs. Another drink of water, wait a second. And normally by then I wasn't hungry anymore. It was kind of like the 70% rule. And actually this worked really well in the times when I went out to eat. So I'd go out and I'd say, actually good example is about a week ago, I went out and I ordered boneless chicken wings and they were amazing. and my rule was, so the rule that I gave myself before I sat down, I was like, all right, I can order anything on the menu, anything I want, doesn't matter, sky's the limit. And I'm going to eat a little over half, and then I'm going to wait until the server comes and asks me if I want it packed up. And if I'm still hungry, I'll finish it. But if in the time it took for her to come up and say, do you want that packed up? If I wasn't hungry anymore, I'd get it packed up.
That's
amazing. And I found almost every time I did this, and same if I was just eating at home, I'd eat, you know, 60-70%, say, just eyeballing it of what I ate, and then I stopped, drank some water, let it settle for a second. I'm like, if I'm still hungry, I will finish this meal. And I think there's maybe twice, maybe, that by the time I reached that point, I really wanted to finish. And the other time, I just packed it up. I'm like, cool, extra lunch tomorrow.
Dude, you made these up on your own?
Yeah, pretty well.
How did you?
I mean, I'm sure someone else thought of it first, but.
The reason I asked that is because, I mean, what you're describing is something that I call basically they're bright lines. You come up with essentially rules that create more order, that reduce ambiguity, right? And I think one of the major benefits of calorie counting is you know exactly how many calories to eat. Like that is the least amount of ambiguity possible. Like here's my number, that's what I'm gonna hit. The issue is when that becomes an obsession, and that becomes an obsession, it can also often lead to binging, which is why now we need to figure out who it works for, who it doesn't, and how to do it appropriately. But basically what you did is you created other rules to follow that allowed you to say, okay, like I'm following it or I'm not. And those rules created an organized way for you to actually follow the guidelines set out for you. So there was no, so when you're going out to eat, and a lot of people get really nervous about going out to eat, they're like, I don't want to ruin all my progress when I go out to eat. And then they often end up binging because they're like, ah, well, screw it. I'm going to ruin it anyway. So I might as well. Whereas you had a plan in place. You're like, I'm going to go. This is the order in which I'm going to eat my food. This is what I'm going to have. I'm going to make sure that I drink so that I get full and I'm not just eating and eating and eating and eating. And then from there, you have a strategy on how to pack up the food and to make sure that you leave with some on your plate. Like you have all of this planned out ahead of time, which I think is tremendous. And the reason I asked if you made it up yourself is because the rules that or the guidelines you made for yourself are amazing, but it's not like necessarily those are magical guidelines. It's just you made your own guidelines that worked really well for you, and anyone can do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like for me specifically, because I can just look at a meal and figure out the macros, I was notorious for sitting at a restaurant, sitting in front of a menu and like, okay, how much protein am I going to get out of this? How much carbs am I getting out of this? How much fats are going to be, you know, how much of the meal can I eat? Do I have to pack it up? And then ordering food got stressful. And that's not fun because, you know, now eating isn't fun. And then binging isn't fun. And then not eating isn't fun. So I've taken the entire experience of food and just made it suck ass. And like that, you know, thinking about it, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, okay, what can we put in place? My 70% rule came. I thought of it because I was reading this paper that came out not too long ago on the time lap, the time gap between food getting your stomach and leptin triggering in your brain. For those listening, leptin is the chemical in your brain that tells you you're satisfied after food. And they did a really neat study that I found. On the time it takes with depending on your gut health for how long it takes from the food in the stomach to tell your brain that you're full. And there's a gap between that, which is how you can massively overeat that full feeling, provided you're eating within that gap of time where it's not being signaled. And then that clicked in my head. I was like, oh, so if I just eat, say, most of my meal and then give it 10 minutes or so, most of that signaling will kick in and I'll know if I'm actually full or not. And if I'm not full, then, you know, clearly I must have done a lot that day, or my lunch was smaller than I thought, and I'll keep going. And if at that point I am full, which almost every time I was, then we'll pack it up for tomorrow.
That's amazing. I love that. That's an incredible strategy.
Yeah. Now, not always easy said than done. So I mentioned that it wasn't all cupcakes and rainbows. So where the month got rough was almost 2 weeks ago today. And I happened to be invited to the 50th birthday party of the fire chief of where I live. And if you think I'm passing up a 70s themed disco party at the fire hall, you are mistaken. There's no way I'm missing that. And the fire hall where it was held is about a 10-minute walk from where I live. Keep in mind, I'm 5'9", so it might be a 7-minute walk for some people. Pick me 10. And so, like I mentioned before, I've had a knee surgery already. And that entire week had been fine. Like Monday, I went to the gym. Life was good. Tuesday, I did kickboxing and jiu-jitsu. Life was good. Wednesday, gym again.
Oh, there we go. Doing some jiu-jitsu. I love it.
Oh, I've been doing jiu-jitsu for years, dude.
I know. You told me. I love it.
can't wait to be on your Instagram, me and you grappling it out. See what happens. So Thursday, trained again, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, life's good. Friday, hit the gym in the morning because I knew, like, on my way to work, because I knew I'd be going to this party after work. And that life was fine and dandy. That was actually a really, really good week a couple weeks ago. And then in the 10 minutes, I'm not a pro when it comes to, like, physiology by any means. But in the 10 minutes it took me to walk there, my knee was already swelling and it hurt to walk. And I just feel a grinding at the IT band insertion on the outside of the knee. And then I'm like, okay, I'll sit for a little bit. This will go away. Go through the whole night. And then I walk home. And by the time I get back up to my place, I'm limping and I'm in like a lot of pain.
Jeez.
And the level of frustration that kicked in was insane. I had my best friend over at the time. And I'm like, dude, I'm just going to go to bed. I'm going to sleep this off. It's probably fine. I ice it, you know, hop in the shower, switch the shower to cold at the end, try to just keep inflammation down, get blood flowing, hop in bed. Had an atrocious sleep that night. I was waking up probably every 30, 45 minutes in pain. And I woke up the next morning, look at my phone. I'm like, I have to go to work today. Like, I have to go into work for at least an hour. So knee brace goes on, out the door. And remember, all I had to do that morning was to deliver a piece of exercise equipment to one of my clients' houses. I offered to do it in my truck. And I get back, and the pain was excruciating. I hadn't eaten yet. And I remember walking in the front door. My best friend just woke up off the couch. And he's like, how's it going, man? And I remember just yelling. I was just, the rage buildup inside of me was insane. And I was just, you know, F this, F that, this is stupid. And, you know, I can't believe I'm in all this pain. I didn't even fucking do anything. And just that pain from hurt to sit, hurt to stand, hurt to walk. I still had to work my 10, 12 hour days like I always do because I don't, you know, no one else is going to do it. And I was just always in pain. And now I couldn't train. So we're taking all this pain and the atrocious, like every time I rolled over in bed, I'm wide awake now because it hurts. So now I'm barely sleeping, which is something I've been trying to prioritize over the last little bit, is actually getting good sleep. And thanks to my knee, I lost the ability to do everything I enjoy. I'm not going out on walks. I'm not, going hiking. I'm not training at all. So no gym, no kickboxing, no jujitsu, like nothing. So I just right away, in the span of 20 minutes of walking, which is seemingly nothing, I lost the ability to do everything I enjoy to do. And I gained an astronomical amount of pain. And that was a massive 2 weeks, to the point I'm still kind of limping today. It's not fully better, but I'm at least able to go do something. So now we're going to go to the light of the end of the tunnel. Because that really sucked. And I don't recommend anybody blow their knee out. It sucks. Speaking from experience.
Absolutely awful.
And, even with all that anger and frustration, it's because it's out of my control. There's not, once it's flared up, there's nothing I can do. And in my opinion, there's almost nothing more frustrating than when something like that happens and there's nothing you can do about it except for hope the inflammation goes down and do your stretches and just wait for it to get better. So I'm just hurrying up and waiting.
Yep.
And for anyone who doesn't believe me that's when things are out of your control, it's the most frustrating. Just try to pin down a toddler and see what happens.
Pin down a what?
Pin down a toddler. Just try to pin down a 4-year-old and tell them not to move. It's not going to go well.
I mean, as a brief aside, I think not feeling in control in anything in life is is probably the main cause of frustration, anxiety, anger, resentment. I mean, we can see this very clearly in politics. When you feel like you have no control over what the government is doing, regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat, I don't care what you are. When you feel like you have no control over what is going on in culture and society, and whatever you do, it doesn't matter because the higher power has more control, it is one of the scariest things in the world. And you can see that in all aspects of life. If you have an injury, if your family member gets deathly ill and you have no control over it, you lose your job. When you don't have control, it is the scariest thing because you're like, well, what do I do? It's like, well, yeah, you definitely have to wait on, especially with the injury. But I think the best way to get out of that fear, out of that anger, out of that resentment is to find what you do have control over. Whatever it is you can control, you focus on that with every ounce of your being, because if you focus on what you can't control, you will increase anxiety, you'll increase anger, you'll increase resentment. When you focus on what you can control, now you start to actually see an action plan for how to improve and get better.
I 100% couldn't agree more. I'm really glad you brought that up because it's almost like this talk seems planned. That's exactly what I was about to say. So through all of that, the only thing that really kept me from binge eating is at that point, the only thing that was in my control was what I was eating. Out of every aspect of my life. Because I had to go to work. I had to deal with pain. I couldn't train because I couldn't bend or straighten my leg properly. My sleep was atrocious. And I'm like, all right, the only thing that I really have control over right now is what I'm eating. And that sense of control is like light at the end of the tunnel almost. So it's just, okay, I can do this and I know it will help. And that's what I'm going to focus on. That's what I'm going to do well at. And that feeling of control was helping me offset the feelings of anger that I had from having a flare up over seemingly nothing.
That's huge. I love that. And it's one of the reasons that when people ask what should they focus on first, workouts or nutrition, it's a hard question because I think it depends on what you enjoy more. But I mean, for me, usually my answer boils down to you might have an injury sometime. You might be traveling. You might not always be able to get to the gym or work out, but you always have to eat no matter what, no matter who you are, you always have to eat, which is why getting a better understanding of mastering your nutrition, I think, is arguably the most important thing, because as long as you're living, you've got to eat. And just like this scenario is the perfect example. When you can focus on something you can control, that's when you can start to reduce anxiety and start making positive steps forward. So even though it wasn't an optimal situation, at least you could go back to something you could control to really set your mind right.
Yeah, 100%. That's what I found worked really well for me. So then even though I'm going through all that, that control I had over my nutrition and not binging was that feel good feeling and that level of control that I was after in that situation, instead of just letting, because normally, you know, that would happen. And I'm like, all right, looks like I'm making pierogi poutine. For all my American listeners, that's where you make pierogies and then you add brown gravy and shredded cheese.
Oh, so
it's,
man.
It's a calorie circus. If you're bulking, that's, you know, it's like 5,000 calories a serving.
Wait, what's your heritage?
I'm Canadian.
Interesting. Do they have pierogies in Canada?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Okay.
You know, essentially, Canada is exactly the same as the States, but we just need a polar bear license to ride those around instead of cars.
Got it.
Yeah. But yeah, so normally I would, especially since my knee injury, every time I tweaked it, regular places I was looking is just eating like there was no tomorrow. And sometimes I'm way better at it now than I was before, but it'd be drinking.
Interesting.
Especially through all the pain. If I had 6, 7, 8 drinks, I could actually get through a night of sleep.
God.
I would numb it enough.
Got
but that was also counterproductive because I would wake up and I'd feel like trash. And it most certainly didn't help with the injury heal, because now I'm, you know, dehydrated and my body's dealing with all these other biological processes that happen when a bunch of alcohol is in your system. God only knows where we live, what condition my liver was in at the time.
Jeez.
But yeah, those are my regular turn tos through pain. And in the last couple months, ever since, you know, talking to you and coming out and having to be honest with not only thousands of strangers on the internet, which has been weirdly motivating to stay on track.
Isn't that incredible?
That was such a weird thing. I mentioned it the last time too. And I'm like, all right, Nick, a bunch of people that you don't know.
Have you gotten a bunch of DMs about this?
Oh, tons. And I've answered all of them and I appreciate all of them. If anybody wants to, go ahead. I'm more than happy to answer your questions or tell you how I'm doing.
What's your Instagram, just so everyone can follow you?
It's Nick_Bowman. So NICK_BOWMANN. If anybody's interested in coming to say hi.
Definitely go say hi to Nick for sure. I mean, aside from how incredible he's done with all of this, which is, I mean, literally going from 3 to 5 binges a week to one binge an entire month. Aside from that extraordinary progress, the whole reason this happened is because he was open enough and honest enough and courageous enough to reach out to me via Instagram and be honest and say it, that he was struggling with it and he needed help. And I think, you know, if you're struggling with something, reach out, whether it's to a friend, to a family member, to a professional, like get help, like reach out for it. It's not a weakness. Reaching out for help is a strength.
Yeah. I would like to stress that point again.
Please.
of reaching out. You know, for those who may have forgotten since the first podcast, like I went to university, I have a degree in biology and biochemistry. I'm a certified nutritionist through, you know, Canadian School of Natural Nutrition as a holistic nutritionist. I have a couple other smaller certifications under it. I've been, you know, running a supplement store and doing, you know, helping people with meal planning and working with clients for years. And the biggest, so it's your lack of knowledge isn't there. It's not that I didn't know what was going on. And I still, these changes didn't happen until I reached out, like until I was open and honest. And I'm like, you know what? I don't have this under control and I need to leave my ego at the door and tell someone, hey, I could really use a hand with this. And it's worth so much more than for a lot of people going through this, and like the embarrassment that they might feel, and you know, the resentment and the guilt and the feelings that they're having, I understand it's hard. No one wants to, you know, go to all their friends and be like, guess what I suck at? You know, guess what these problems I'm having? That's not a comfortable conversation by any means, but I can't stress enough just how much that is worth to just go out and say, hey, I need help with this. And I'm not proud of it. It's just, I need help. And I think you'd be amazed how willingly people will help you and how much they really want to see you succeed.
I think that was
the kind of support that you can get.
I think that was one of the coolest parts about the difference between the first podcast we did and the second podcast. Because in the first one, it was your first time really openly talking about it. And in the second one, you were like, my girlfriend listened to it and she was like, why didn't you ever tell me? And your clients listened to it and they were like so happy that you spoke about it. When on the first podcast, it was something that was a little bit anxiety producing and nerve wracking to think about either speaking about it with your clients or the fact that they might know about it. And it turns out that everyone, like you just said, is way more supportive than we might think.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I was absolutely terrified. And like, you know, I competed in fighting. Like, I've literally been locked in a cage with someone where the winner is the guy who can leave conscious. And I was I was terrified to tell people that I binge. Terrified.
This is just another, a really important time, especially for me and I think for you as well. I mean, the majority of people who I work with, either in the inner circle or even who listen to the podcast or on Instagram, the majority of people I work with are women. And I think a lot of it is because women tend to be more willing to discuss these types of issues. Generally, I think they're more in touch with their emotions. They tend to be more willing and ready and able to discuss these types of things and to face them head on than men are. But I think what's really important is what you just said. You were locked in a cage fighting essentially to the point of whoever could not be unconscious is the winner. And I think it's very easy to look at people in that situation and be like, okay, well, they would never struggle with disordered eating or binge eating or whatever, or being self-conscious or whatever it is. It's like disordered eating, feeling self-conscious, feeling insecure. None of this has any relation to gender at all. And generally from what I've found, it affects everybody equally. It's mainly the difference in who is actually willing to speak about it more. And it's generally women who are more open to speaking about it. And if there's something that I think I could very much encourage men to do is to be more open about it and to speak about it. Because just like we've done here with you, it will not get better if you don't seek help. So whether you're a man listening and you're nervous or anxious to bring it up, or you're a woman listening and maybe you know a man who might be struggling with it, finding a way to make sure that they know it's okay to talk about it and to discuss it is probably the most important thing that we can get across.
Yeah, 100%. And that's speaking from experience. The literal last thing I wanted to do was to tell people where I struggled. Absolute last thing. You know, people see me as like this young guy, goes to the gyms, tough, runs a business, you know, finished university. And the last thing I want to be like, all right, guys, I'm really, really bad for this. And it's the literal thing that you pay me to help you with. Like, that is not a comfortable conversation. That's like being, you know, you're an amazing mechanic and like, okay, guys, my car has been broken for like 2 months.
It's the perfect example. It's like, I just don't know how to fix it. I can fix all of your cars, but my car, I just can't figure it out.
Yeah. And so I know how to fix it. I'm just not. Right? I know exactly what to do. It's just really hard for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that analogy. That is a tremendous analogy. I love that. So talk to me, what else changed throughout the month? Do you want to discuss what happened weight-wise or anything else?
Oh, that'd be good, actually, especially because you've been bringing it up on your Instagram fairly recently.
Yeah.
I've stepped on the scale every single day since the first podcast. And I really stopped giving a shit what the number said.
Yes.
I remember, I texted you, I'll tell people about it. Remember I messaged you and I'm like, dude, I gained a pound today. And I went down I think 4 pounds in the span of 5 days. It was just down, 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 down. And I stepped on the scale and it went up. And I know damn well that that is like water retention. That is, you know, late night workout. That is a million and one different things. Like, I, you know, I gained 4 pounds eating breakfast if I drink enough water. Like, I know that is an irrelevant weight increase. And I didn't even want to text you my number to be like, by the way, I gained this weight. Because it's just like right away in my head, that was the, you know, that's that natural, my desire to do well at things kicking in. And it's like, you can't tell them that. You can't tell them you fucked up. Skip breakfast. And, you know, it's going on in my head. And then I remember I message you and I'm like, hey, I gained a pound. And you're like, and? So, like, that's fine. Like, it'll go back down. It's chill. Like, fluctuations happen. Like, I know this. Not that I don't know better, it's that I had a small mental breakdown in the morning. And after it was going and stepping on the scale day after day after day after day, it eventually reached a point. I stepped on the scale this morning, 225.2. So I'm down 4 pounds since we started this. I stepped on the scale this morning and I'm like, heck yeah, progress. And that was kind of the extent of it.
Down 4 pounds since we started this?
Yeah, I'm down 4 pounds in the last 4 and a bit weeks since our last podcast.
Dude, that is insane. That's insane.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
It's absolutely,
I mean, without like incredible. Yelling into my microphone, I'm pretty pumped about that.
It's absolutely incredible. I mean, I'm almost speechless, but there's so much here. And I'll tell you this. I think this is a really important point to clarify. If you had gained 10 pounds and only binged once, I would still consider that a huge win, mainly because the number one thing that we were aiming to accomplish was to eliminate and reduce the binge eating. So,
yes.
And I think it's really important to remember that, because when the goal is – when you want to lose fat, when you want to lose weight, you can't do that on a foundation of an unhealthy relationship with food. And if you're binging or having any disordered relationship with food and you're trying deliberately to lose fat, it will almost certainly be short term, because again, the foundation is built on an unhealthy relationship with food, which is why for the first month we didn't have you count. We didn't have you try and lose weight. It was solely simply focused around making sure we could eliminate and reduce the binging. Went from 3 to 5 times a week to 1 time a week, an average of 4 times a month, which was insane. Then last time we spoke, we're like, you know what? Okay, cool. We'll try and lose some weight as well. But also with the clarification that if the binges were happening, that we were going to eliminate that from it and just really, again, focus on eliminating, reducing the binging. And not only did you reduce your binging even more to just one time, but you, over the course of the month, lost an average of a pound a week. That is so beyond extraordinary. And I think if nothing else, this is going to give people a lot of hope. And I don't know of any other podcast or video or anything ever made ever that's followed someone's journey through this process as closely as we have here. And it makes me incredibly proud of you and impressed with you and blessed to have had this opportunity to work with you and to speak with you, because I think I know for a fact it's helping literally thousands of people. It's the two podcasts we've done already have been two of the most popular ones I've ever done, and the consistently most requested. Every time I do a Q&A, someone's like, when is Nick coming on again? When's Nick coming on again? Every single time. And it's just, I really hope that you are tremendously proud of yourself, not just for how much other people are going to be helped here, but for how well you've done as an individual. Like, you've gone above and beyond. You've worked incredibly hard. As you said, you've pushed through some really tough times, but you've consistently tried outrageously hard. And I'm just beyond impressed.
I really appreciate that, man. I feel really proud of myself. I mean, you know, like you said, even if I went up 10 pounds, my main goal ever since I started talking to you was to be able to eat food and not hate myself after. And the fact that I'm there now has been tremendous for me. Like, losing a couple pounds is a byproduct of that, and that's awesome. But even if I had gained weight, the fact that I can go to bed at night and not resent my existence because of what I ate, and the fact that I can go out for food and I don't have to analyze a menu and, you know, track my calories and try to starve myself. And, you know, in fact, I'm not skipping meals anymore to try to keep my calories down. Because, okay, especially too, like in the nutrition world, oh man, there's, you know, 5 billion diets, give or take 5 or 6. And so then that's the, I'll be honest, I'll tell a little bit of a story. Every time that I kind of like in a way of self-sabotage of like messing up my eating to try to eat less, and people around me would ask me about it, I would justify it. And I justify it because I've read so many ridiculous diets where, like, you know, I'd go out and like, I'd skip breakfast. Well, now I'm intermittent fasting, so it's okay. And I'd sometimes skip dinner. Well, I'm, you know, I'm, they call it the warrior diet, where you fast for 20 hours and eat in a 4-hour window. And there's the one meal a day for the days when I worked all day and I just came home and then just had dinner. People are like, oh, is that good for you? I'm like, oh yeah, you know, one meal a day diet. you cut out carbs, and then, oh, now I'm doing keto, so it's fine. And you're just, you know, just justifying being overly restrictive. And then that snowballed into, you know, restrict, binge, restrict, binge, restrict, binge. And coming out of that was such a massive win on my end. And then, you know, for anyone who's done it, to be able to sit down and eat food and not hate yourself is worth so much.
I sort of want to make that the title of the next podcast, How to Eat Food and Not Hate Yourself. I think so many people can relate to just that. How to eat food and not hate yourself. Because, I mean, what a really morbid thought, but it's true that so many people can't eat food without hating themselves during and after it, and then just feeling so guilty about it. I mean, especially going back to what we were saying earlier, is like, no matter who you are, where you live, you know, whatever you're into, you can't live without eating. Eating is the one thing you always have to do. And when it's the one thing that no matter what you always have to do, it's a pretty awful and sad existence to hate yourself every time you do it. And I think what you've done for thousands of people is give a tremendous amount of hope and really amazing insight too. I mean, the strategies that you laid out today in terms of how you were able to moderate your intake, how you were able to go out to eat without necessarily counting your calories, how you were able to stay full, how you were able to keep yourself in check, how you're able to monitor your emotions and why things were going on and as they were happening. I mean, I think you've given a tremendous amount of tools and an overwhelming amount of hope for people. And I think if we're really talking about something magical, then giving someone hope is really an incredible thing, because once they have hope, they have a reason to try.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I get the joke I made earlier, how many psychiatrists take change a light bulb. When you really want to change, and then your ability to change, not just your desire, but like the hope, the feeling that you can really do it, is such a life-changing moment when you just have that thing in your head where you're like, yes, I got this.
100%. Man, Nick, is there anything that you want to leave everybody with? I mean, definitely, please, again, tell them where they can find you on Instagram. And I just want to say one more time, a huge, huge thank you for coming on and speaking with me and going through literally 3 podcasts, an incredible time investment from you. And I mean, I really, really appreciate it. Please tell people where they can find you and if there's any last message you'd like to leave them with.
Yeah. So my Instagram's Nick_Bowman, NICK_BOWMANN. If you want to come say hey, I do my best to answer all my messages. And really the best thing I can do out of all this is, you know, take a moment. Like, you have to spend every waking moment of your entire life with yourself. That is a non-optional event. And it's totally okay to take a moment and figure out, what do I need? And then go and get that. And in my case, I needed help with something that I struggled with. And it was going out and asking for that. And just pride aside, ego aside, whatever it may be, whatever your situation it is, take a minute to focus on you. It is worth so much more than you can imagine. And at the end of the day, you can, whatever's going on, you can get through it. But you got to focus on being happy first. Because if you're not happy with yourself, then just, you can't be happy in anything else.
I love that, man. Man, thank you so much. This has been a blessing, and I really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you very soon, okay?
That sounds good. I appreciate it, Jordan.
Talk to you soon, Nick.
Thank you very much. Sounds good, buddy. Bye-bye.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. I want to give a huge thank you to Nick for coming on and doing this whole series with me. It means the world to me. If you enjoyed the series, please leave a review on iTunes. They've been helping a lot, and I really appreciate it. With that being said, have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon.